told my children many times that one of the most attractive things about people is their confidence. You're most drawn to people with confidence, someone who has a certainty, a security about themselves. You watch movies, typically, and you're most attracted to people in the movies that seem to have an air of confidence. Not arrogance, necessarily, but confidence. I mean, we don't watch movies of guys who say, well, I think I can do it. We watch movies of guys who say, make my day. Yes? You want somebody who seems to know there's always, in the midst of all the chaos and confusion, somebody steps up and says, yeah, come after me. You know, I mean, they just know everything, and they have an air of confidence about them. You root for teams that have more confidence. How many of you were Jacksonville Jaguars fans this year? One, yes. They have no confidence. We thought, though, the Atlanta Falcons had some confidence last week. Yes, we're going to take it. And they did have confidence for the first half hour, half of the game. All right? And now there's two other teams going in with confidence. Young ladies who are looking for a husband, who are they looking for? The wimpy guy in the corner or the guy who just seems to, yeah, he knows where he's going. He's got a security and a certainty about who he is. There's a level of confidence that you're looking for. How many of us really have a confidence about where we're headed and what's happening? And when the world becomes chaotic, you're still standing sure on solid ground. Now, there are people who don't know Christ, and there are people who do know Christ that are confident. What's the difference? Well, sometimes there's no difference. It really boils down to who your confidence is in. Two teams going into the Super Bowl are both going to have confidence. One of them is going to walk out the winner, and the other one's confidence is going to be shattered. And then at the beginning of the next season, they start from square one. Men who are full of confidence in the economic world then lose their job or their business, or it all comes shattering down. And they lose their confidence. Women who say, yes, I know all things. I know how to do these things. And I'm confident here and here and here. And then it just begins to crumble. In a world that we live in with our country, you know, where we could be so confident, we can go into any war and win it. We could accomplish anything. We're the top of the economic game globally. We can accomplish anything we want, even if we hit a depression or a recession, we could overcome it. But then, sometimes our confidence begins to diminish because we don't see the results that we're expecting. Sometimes in our lives, what we thought was confidence wasn't really confidence. It was just a bunch of hot air. Because things were going well, but when things don't go so well, we lose our confidence. We've been talking about calling upon God for this last month, and that one of the areas I want us to be challenged on is call upon me for confidence. Because that's where it resides. The confidence that we can have that is certain and secure and always right is in Him. God's the only one we can have confidence in. He's the only one. Do we even need confidence? The scripture speaks of confidence several times. But when we have a world of chaos and uncertainty, we want everything to be right, but it seems like so many other things are wrong. Things don't always go our way. We need confidence. The only truth that is true in the world of confidence is that God is the one we can be confident in. Why? Because God is ultimately in control. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 11. It says, yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and the earth, yours is the dominion. O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. That is quite a statement. In the midst of a lot of other teaching in that chapter, that one just stands out as something I think we ought to all memorize. I mean, yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, the glory, the victory, the majesty, all of these attributes of God. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and the earth, it's all His. Yours is the dominion, O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. Just read that last section for me, starting with, O Lord. Read that out loud with me. O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over. What was the last word? All things. Time, seasons, everything. He is in charge and in control of all things. All power and victory and majesty and glory, it's all His. So when we are lacking confidence to know where do we go and how's this going to happen and all these things that we thought we were in control of are out of control, who is controlling all? Who is exalted over everything? Every situation in your life? God alone. So He says, call upon me, Psalm 50, verse 15. Call upon me in your day of trouble and I will deliver you, I will rescue you, and you'll honor me. Our confidence, listen to me, our confidence must rest in God's sovereignty. Somebody this weekend said that preachers don't preach on the attributes of God. You know, when's the last time you heard a sermon on the attributes of God? I'm thinking, that's all we can talk about that matters in our church. Is who is God and what is He able to accomplish? Let's not elevate the ability of man in church. Let's elevate and expose who God is, which exposes who we aren't. Therefore, we must call upon Him and depend upon His attributes. Our confidence must rest in God's sovereignty. That's why everything will be fine. Everything will be just as it ought to be. Because God's in control. The Bible tells us that He is the absolute ruler and authority over several areas, and I'm just going to highlight three of them. Over nature. God is the ruler over nature. He is the creator and sustainer of everything in nature. He set it up. He created it. He controls it. He sustains it. He even can overrule nature. There is a natural order of things, but once in a while, God chooses to do a miracle, that which is beyond or supernatural over the natural order of things. That's what a miracle is. And He is sovereign over nature. He's over sovereign over history. There is a plan, a progress, even a climax to what God is doing. God's plan is perfect. And He is sovereign over history. Where is the world heading? Wherever God both allows and directs it for His eternal purpose is where it's heading. He's also sovereign and absolute ruler and authority over our lives. You think about this. Many people think, well, I've got a lot of free will. My life is exactly what I've chosen for it to be. Listen, did you choose where or when you were going to be born? How many of you chose when you were going to be born or where? Anybody? The Skinner baby today, if the baby's going to be born, God's willed it. This baby didn't get up this morning and say, you know, I think it's a good time. Now, some of you do the C-section thing and you kind of select when that baby's going to be born. But you as an individual in the womb, you didn't select where or when. You didn't select your circumstances. It was God's sovereign grace and will in your lives that you were born in this country, if this is where you were born. You were born in another country, God selected that. I mean, we have someone from Japan, we got someone from Guatemala here. You know, and some of you in Texas, I mean, like that foreign country. I mean, I understand we're all born where God wanted us to be. How many of you are thankful you weren't born in some country where it's Muslim? And it's you'd be killed to be a Christian. How many are you thankful that you were born into a country where you have some freedoms and you've had some privileges? God selected that. You did not. God is sovereign over your birth. He's sovereign over how long you will live. Job 14:5 speaks of this. He's sovereign over what natural talents that you have. Any abilities and talents that you have, God has given to you. Now, you can exercise them and discipline yourself to become better, but God is the one who has sovereignly given you those. God is the absolute ruler and authority He is the all-sovereign one over nature and history and our lives. There are many things out of your control, but they are not out of God's control. You might think, well, do I have any choices in life? Well, certainly. God has given you a big backyard to play in. Sometimes too big, in my opinion. The way I kind of see God's sovereignty is working, it's like he's put you on the planet, and he's put this big fence up, and he says, okay, go out there. But you can't go beyond certain areas. Why? It's kind of like a chess game. Anybody play chess here? I attempt to play chess, but they don't call it playing when I'm doing it. Just, I don't know what it is. But it's like you're playing chess game with one of the greatest chess masters of the world. You can make all kinds of moves, but is there any doubt in the outcome of that game when it's over? The who's going to win? No, the chess master, because he is sovereign, control, knows all. How many of you have ever taken a cruise? I want to take a cruise someday. My birthday's coming up in March. She wanted to bless me and my wife. You'd have to take care of the other kids, though. But think about the cruise. All right. You get on the cruise, and this is, I'm just imagining this, I imagine, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. You're on the cruise, you can go to the second deck, third deck, you can eat 4, 5, 7 meals a day. I mean, you can get fat and happy. Alright, you get up as late as you want, stay out as late as you want. Alright, yes, is this, I mean, you basically have all kinds of freedom. Do you have any control of the destination of that ship? No. You're having lots of fun. But it's going in the direction that it's been chosen. And that's basically the same thing with God. He has got a plan for your life. He's taking you on a destination. He's giving you some freedoms. He's giving you some freedoms to do things you ought not do. And you will certainly be disciplined for that. How many of you feel like you need to be disciplined after 7 meals on a ship? You know? You'll pay the price for some of those decisions. But God is sovereign in the destination of where your life is heading. Freedom in life in many areas, but God gives you the freedom to choose how to respond to life, but you do not have ultimate totality of control of your life. Which actually should bring you some comfort. Today, let's consider the confidence we can have in the truth and how really that is a reliever of thinking you are in absolute control of your world. You're not. So God's control gives us confidence. I'm going to give you three things today, and I'll give you some additional things for about prayer. But God's control gives confidence in three major areas of life. One is your plans, one is your problems, and one is your prayers. We'll take each of these. Have you ever said, the sky's the limit? I heard someone say, the sky's the limit. That's not a true statement. God is the limit. God is the one who sets the boundaries by which the limits are. God is the limit. And because God is in control, my plans have limits. Yes? You agree? Now, let's see. If you're not quite there yet, because God is in control, my plans have limits. You don't think so. Let me just challenge you in some areas. See, I believe He determines the outcomes, and He has offered great promises to even extend the limits that you currently think are in your world. In Proverbs 19, verse 21, Proverbs 19, 21, many plans are in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord will stand. It's His will that will ultimately be fulfilled. In the ESV version, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. That gives a little more clarity. Have you ever noticed that things don't always go as planned, or as you have planned? Anybody had any plans messed up in the last 6 months? You thought this was going to happen, didn't happen. Things don't always turn out the way we want. Sometimes God has a better idea, and He'll take you in a different direction than you thought. Maybe the ultimate destination will be the same, but the way you get there will be completely different than how you first imagined. God has a way of doing that. At best, our plans are tentative. Look at it in the contemporary English version. I thought this broke it down a little better. We may make a lot of plans, but the Lord will do what He has decided. Whew. There's some theology there we need to embrace. You agree with that? How many of you have ever had plans and then God changes them? When I was in high school, it was not on my radar to be a pastor. actually, with my physique, I thought I was going to be an NFL football player. I had plans. It was either that or be a truck driver, literally. I thought that's the guy I like to drive. I was 16. Before we started this church, I had a resume out over 100 churches. I had a plan. I thought we'd just move on. We'll go to another state. God had a better idea. You agree? How many of you did not marry the first person you thought you might? You know how thankful I am that I did not marry the first person I thought I was going to marry? I got the best one. God had better plans than I had. How many of you are in a job now that you didn't think you'd have 10 years ago? Some of you have a new job that you didn't think you'd have 5 years ago or even a year ago. See, we have plans, but God's purpose will always stand. Because He is in control. Our plans are limited. Now, knowing that our plans are limited and He's in control, there is right responses and wrong responses. Let me give you a wrong response. Presumption. That's a wrong response. Look at Proverbs 27, verse 1. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Some people think, oh, I've got it all figured out. You've got your 5-year plan, your 10-year plan, your 50-year plan. You got it all mapped out, and you're asking God, just bless my plan. I mean, how many of you have a bucket list? How many of you know what a bucket list is? Is this a younger crowd or something? I mean, yeah. We got bucket list. Things that we'd like to accomplish before we die. Fantastic. There's nothing wrong with having plans. But we must submit those plans to the Lord and see what His desire, because His purpose will stand. You don't boast about tomorrow. This must happen. This will happen. This is my list. We make our plans, but life is unpredictable. How many of you live on commission or have lived on commission? Sometimes it's feast and sometimes it's famine. You make your plans, but God's purpose will stand. Life is uncertain. God says we should not presume. On the other hand, we should not worry about it because God is in control. Didn't Jesus say don't worry about it? I mean, the lilies of the field, how they're clothed, the birds of the air. We make our plans, but God's purpose will stand. We trust in Him. We don't presume, neither should we worry. James chapter 4, verse 13 says, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. It's all fine. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor, a mist, that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Verse 15 then says, this is your response. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. God doesn't say making plans is bad. Actually, He says, get up, and you're planning to work. You're planning to do some things to move forward and grow and improve. Make plans, but realize that your plans are tentative. The point is this. A mature faith is flexible with plans. God is a planning God. When He chose to create the world and He planned the 6 days of creation, He didn't just get up and say, I wonder what I'm going to do today. God is a very creative and creating God, and He has a specific order what He's doing. He designs His people to be the same way. But realize, He is sovereign and we are not. We make our plans, we submit them to the Lord, but we trust the Lord to take care of what He ultimately wants to do. Our confidence does not come in our planning or in our ideas. It comes in His sovereignty and ultimate control. There's two rules of confidence I'll throw out. One is that we can call upon God for the big stuff and the small stuff of our lives. That's rule number one of confidence. You want confidence? We can call upon Him for the big stuff and the small stuff. Here's the second rule of confidence. Everything small stuff to God. So you just trust Him. God, Your plans are best. So if it's wrong to presume and just Your plan will be blessed and God has to obey Your plans, it's right to respond with cooperation, planning under the sovereignty of God and trusting that He will direct your path. You make your plans, but say, God, if this is your will, I will obey it. If you have another direction, I will walk in obedience with that. I'm going to live with a mature, flexible faith. It was years ago, people used to, and I'm not familiar with anybody, but I read this, years ago, people used to end their letters with the letters D.V. Anybody know what that is? Anybody know Latin? I don't say this right. If you don't know Latin, good, then I can pronounce it any way I want. But it was, they'd sign their name, they'd add these little letters, and it was for Deo Valenti. It means God willing. They'd write their letters, sign their name, and put basically, God willing. This is what my ideas are. This is what my thoughts are. This is how my life is going. God willing. This is what I'm going to do. There was a sense that everything was under God's sovereignty and control, not under our lives of decision. What it means to be in cooperation with God when your plans are being made. Another verse you can write down, Proverbs 16, verse 9. The mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. You get up in the morning, you have your quiet time, and you say, God, what do you want to do with this day? What are your plans? I've got some thoughts, I've got kind of what my work is expecting, what my children need, what my spouse may require. But God, what is your agenda? I'm open to whatever you want. And he may reveal it then, or he may just reveal it, unfold it throughout the day. Now, when you have a mindset that you have your plan, but you're saying, God, whatever way you want to direct my steps, I will be confident in that, and that will be your will. Interruptions begin to be interpreted differently. How many of you ever have interruptions in your day? How many of you appreciate interruptions? Some of you like interruptions because it's a distraction from what you don't really want to be doing in the first place. Alright, but I'm one of those guys too. I'm one of those guys, I kind of like my plan. I try to get here early and I've got a whole course. Joanne, how often am I as consistent in being able to do exactly what I want in my day on a daily basis? Yeah, it never happens. There are interruptions, sometimes dozens, sometimes literally hundreds in a day. Interruptions, I'm like, Lord, I told you my plan. I really was hoping to get this done, this done, this done, this done. It looks like I'm going to have to put that on the back burner because you've allowed a bunch of interruptions in my life. And God has convicted me about that over and over again. And tomorrow I'll have to repent again. But if God is ultimately in control and sovereign, and I understand his will, but I don't know it completely, and I just turn my day over to him and say, God, whatever you bring me, I will walk in those steps. And then the interruption comes. It's not an interruption. It's a ministry opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to grow or to contribute to someone else. It's an opportunity to see what God's plans are as he unfolds his will. Isn't it better to know you're not living your plan to the T, but you really could be living God's plan? When you just lay off the burden of trying to control the world, and you say, I want to walk daily with Jesus. What a difference. What a difference. Then we're not always fighting the chaos, the disruptions in our world. We're just sensing what God's going to do. You notice Jesus was never in a hurry and never late. He just was always on time. How many of you would like to walk in that kind of peace? You got up and you have a plan, you have a direction, but if God were to change it, it's okay. Paul had plans. He was going to go in a particular area. God said no. Shut the door and send him in another direction. And the people who ended up receiving Paul later were very thankful that God redirected Paul. Our confidence is not in ourselves, but it's in the plans of God and his direction. Planning without prayer is presumption. You don't pray, Lord, bless what I'm doing. You pray, Lord, help me to do what you're blessing. God has a plan. So help me to do what you want to bless because you are in control and my plans have limits. There's your prayer for Monday morning. So because God is in control, my plans have limits. Let's consider number two. Because God is in control, my problems have a purpose. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 6 and 7. It says, in this you greatly rejoice. Even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials. So that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. There are various trials. There is temptation to be distressed by these. But these come, these problems come in our lives, I'm convinced from the scriptures, so that the proof of your faith will be evidenced. God did not promise you a rose garden when you came into the faith. That your problems actually have a purpose, and God has a purpose. He is the one in sovereign control of all things. Life is not a series of random accidents. Life is not totally unplanned and out of control. Life is not without meaning. There is an order. God has a purpose. God knows what's going on. He's weaving the fabric in your life in a tapestry of light and dark threads. Thought about the beauty of the various colors in a pattern? Think about the various beauties God's allowing to weave together in your life to make your life. Happy and sad times. The richness of, and the texture and the full color to your life that God is putting together. Nothing, by the way, can come into your life without God's permission and God's purpose. One guy say this, everything in your life is Father filtered. That's good. Everything in your life is Father filtered. It's been through His mind and heart, and He has a direction and a purpose. But don't misunderstand, not everything in God's that happens is God's perfect will. I mean, if you sin, that's not God's will, His perfect will. Somebody sins against you, that's not God's perfect will. That's why we're to pray, Lord, Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In heaven, God's will is done perfectly. On earth, God's will is not always accomplished perfectly. If it is done perfectly, you'd never have to pray, Your will be done. I want to give you just briefly, you can jot these three things down if you choose, the three wills of God. Some different language perhaps than you're used to. There's a will of decree. It's what God has determined will come to pass. Revealing what will come to pass. There's also a will of demand. It's like it's revealed in the law, that which He commands. But there's permission, in a sense, He allows disobedience to those demands. You have the permission, but you do not have the right to break it. And then there's the will of disposition. There reveals what is pleasing to Him. So when we speak of the will of God, we're not always speaking of the same thing. There is a decree, the thing that will come to pass. There is the demand, that which He asks for, requires. You are not to break, but He has given permission that it will be broken. And then there's the will of disposition, that which pleases Him. It would please Me if these things were to take place. God permits. But listen, He will perfect. Example, think about this. Paul in prison in Philippi. Paul could have been crying out, Lord, why would You have this? Certainly this isn't your perfect will. This doesn't please You. But God used that opportunity to bring a jailer to belief. Daniel in the lion's den. Is this what God's perfect will would be? That all of His believers would be in a lion's den? But God used that as a decreed will. In a sense, He desires that to bring out that the lion's mouth would be shut and everyone would be amazed. Moses and Pharaoh. God's sovereign will in the battle of Moses and Pharaoh. Moses says, let My people go. And Pharaoh could have just said, okay, take the people, just go. Even during the 10 plagues, perhaps Pharaoh might have desired to turn, but God's purpose was in this. It was better. He was going to not only show that he is in sovereign control of all things, he was conquering Egyptian gods in every one of those. The gods they called upon, that they had confidence in. But God showed that he is the only one you can have confidence in. Jesus on the cross, as he's going, they think, how in the world can this be good? But God had a greater plan and a purpose for the difficulties there, that Jesus took on the sins of all those who would believe. God loves to turn crucifixions into resurrections. That sometimes your problems have a greater purpose than you fully understand right now. That's why we call upon him. We can have confidence. It's okay, I'm going through this because I'm going through it with God and trusting in his purpose. The things you wish were removed from your life, you can consider them. God, why don't you just take this away? Wouldn't it be better? Just take it away. The very things you may pray that God would just take away, maybe the very things that God is using to shape you and make you into a person of confidence in him. That you're still trusting in yourself. So God is allowing some things to be removed or some additional burdens to be added on just so your faith would be perfected. What about Job? My cubby was doing some study on Job about a year ago. Satan was telling God, Job, if everything was taken away, Job wouldn't worship you. He's not following you because he really trusts you, basically. He's just, it's because of all the conveniences, all the benefits, all the blessings. That's the only reason he follows you. And God gives Satan permission. You can take it all away. You can do everything but take his life. God was completely involved in our whole process, even though Satan was the one wanting to put the torment on Job. Wealthiest man in the world, and he lost it all. Children, painful disease. The only thing that he was left, besides his life, was a nagging wife and some depressing friends. Everything was going wrong. You study Job, you discover that Satan was doing these things, and God allowed it for a greater purpose. And what was Job's response in that process? Of course, he had a lot of different responses, but early on in chapter 1, he said, naked I come from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Every one of you sang that song this morning. You sing it with conviction or just convenience this morning? What about Joseph? His brothers were jealous of him. You know the story. He was the favored one in the family. He was put in a pit, sold into slavery, taken to the foreign into a foreign country, sold as a slave to Potiphar. Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. He ends up in prison, falsely accused. The first 40 years of his life were horrendous. And you think, what's the purpose in that? Where's God in that? Is there any purpose to my problems? Can he have any confidence in his life? Apparently, Joseph had some confidence in the Lord. Because when he finally was out of jail and he went from the pit to the palace, he says to his brothers that put him into slavery, and first was going to kill him and then just put him in the pit. He says to them in Genesis 50, verse 20, many of you know the verse, as for you, you meant evil against me, but, what's the remainder of the verse? But God meant it good. You had your plans, but God had a greater plan. You know that sometimes God lets you hit bottom before he takes you to the top? What he did with these two gentlemen we just spoke of. Some of you are going through some tough times right now, and I just want to say, you know what, the story's not over. God hasn't written the final chapter, or he hasn't revealed the final chapter to you. Like he's written it. He just hasn't revealed it. So how do you have confidence moving forward? You must remember that God is in control. Some of you have been hurt by other people. Even in your family, you've had parents that have hurt you. Siblings. Children. how do I have confidence to move on and know that God is going to fulfill His will? They intended to hurt you. They intended to do something bad, but God is allowing it for good. He is in control. What is your response? The book of Hebrews, it shares with us when Jesus was going to the cross and all the torment that will happen there, He looked past the cross to the prize and what would come from it. I mean, the disciples who were abandoning Him at the moment, the people who were cursing Him, the people who were spitting at Him, He knew all that this is going to happen. He observed it and He experienced all of it. But He endured the cross in order for God's glory and full will to be accomplished. How about us? When all things seem to be going chaotic, do we have our confidence in God, in His sovereign control, and be willing to endure whatever He desires so that He would get the glory? Let me give you the last one. Because God is in control, my prayers have an impact. God is in sovereign control and He's invited us to participate through prayer and conversation with Him. Sometimes people ask me, do you think prayer really works because God's just in control? Absolutely. Because God has invited us into the process, He's going to stretch our faith and show us some great things, and He has asked us to participate through prayer. You may be praying about something and Satan continues whispering, it's just a waste of time, it's futile, God doesn't really want to hear from you, it's not going to make a difference anyway. Who do you think you are? What do you think you're doing? God's not listening to you. Fact is, prayer is an invitation to participate in God's revealing His will. God is in control, and if God were not sovereign, prayer would be a waste of time. Because what are we asking someone to do something if he is unable? Can you imagine praying to God, God, I really need this. I need your help here. And He says, you know, I'd really like to help, but I just can't. Sorry. Nice grandpa who's broke and he just can't give you any more money. God, I have this problem. I'm going bankrupt. I've got this health problem. It's above my pay grade. Works because God is in control. He is sovereign. And on the basics of the miracles He's able to do and His sovereignty, He has said now in Ephesians chapter 3 verse 20, which we just spoke of last week, now to Him who is able to do far more abundantly than all we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. Over 20 times in the New Testament it says, ask. Ask. It's an encouraging phrase. Because when everything is out of my control, we know it's not out of His control, so we ask. Prayer is an incredible privilege. So why don't we get everything that we pray for? Here's one of the questions that some people say, well, I don't know if I should pray because I don't know if God wants to answer. Or, there have been many times I've prayed and I haven't gotten what I've prayed for. How many of you have ever had a prayer that just wasn't answered or hasn't been answered yet? And sometimes it's discouraging. It's kind of like that football team. Like the Chicago Cubs who want to win the World Series. Should we even play this year? Because, you know, we haven't had success in all these years. Well, you can just tell every Chicago Cubs fan, it's not God's will for your team to win. It's not God's will for Atlanta Falcons to win the Super Bowl. It's okay. Yeah. What about your life? Do you ever feel like you just keep knocking? Keep asking. God hasn't answered. Let me give you, in closing, the three reasons why we don't get everything we prayed for. First, God is not a prayer genie. You don't put in your little prayer stub and rub His belly and get whatever you want. Some people treat God like that. They take other religious thoughts and you bring it into Christianity and you just think God is your bellhop. Ring the bell, He's supposed to do whatever you tell Him to do. And we tip Him once in a while for that. Maybe you're getting as much answered prayer as you're tipping Him. I don't know. God is not a prayer genie. What if God answered? Just think about it for a moment. Blow your mind. What if God answered every prayer that you ever offered in your life so far? What a weapon that would be, huh? you might have some people problems and you just wanted God to remove them. Guess what? I bet you would have been removed already too. What if God gave us everything we ever wanted? Would you call us spiritual spoiled brats? How many of you have ever been to Walmart and seen those kids who get everything they ever want? I hope, how many of your parents ever gave your children everything they ever wanted? Everything they ever wanted? Oh yeah, you have to listen to the whole question here. How many of you have ever had children and you've given them everything they've ever wanted? Everything they ever asked for? I hope you never do that. What will you get if you do that? You get kids at Walmart. That's what you get. God is wiser than to give everything we ask for. Everything that we want. He's wiser than to give us that. He's not a prayer genie. He is sovereign and He has a purpose and He has all wisdom. Like a parent over children, God is far more. That's one reason you don't get everything you ask for. Second thing is, God hears conflicting prayers. Two people pray for their Super Bowl teams to win. Who's God's going to answer there? Does God even care? Every election. How many of you pray during elections? You pray for the primaries as much as the general election? You pray for the primaries. You got, I don't know how many Christians are in America. Not enough. But they're all praying for their candidate. Well, am I supposed to answer this group's prayer, or this group's prayer, or this group's prayer? We're not even talking about particular parties. It could be all within the same party. And they're all praying for different people. I'm thankful God doesn't just answer it the way I want it. God has a sovereign will, and He is going to accomplish His purpose. You ever prayed for it to rain? I lived up in Missouri. We prayed for rain all the time as farmers. There's people in Kansas praying for sunshine because they wanted to go out on the weekends. Do conflicting prayers. People want other things. But we don't have the full understanding of all of God's will. So do we just pray and then trust that God will accomplish what His purpose is? The pastor walking through the woods, he meets a big bear. Big black bear. Bear starts chasing him. He runs down the mountain. Pastor trips and falls. Begins to pray, "Oh God, please make this a Christian bear." The bear stops in his tracks, gets on his hands and knees, puts his paws together and says, "Oh Lord, bless the food I'm about to partake." Two praying, conflicting prayers. Who do you want Him to bless? Third thing is this, God knows what's best and you do not. One of the reasons why God doesn't always answer the prayer that you've asked specifically is because He knows what's best and you don't. 1 John chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. This is the confidence that we have before Him. That if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And if we know that He hears us, in whatever we ask, we know that we have the request which we have asked from Him. We know that we have confidence that He will accomplish His will. But He's asked us to pray. The attitude of prayer is, "Lord, this is my request, but Your will be done." That's what Jesus prayed. I want you to apply this in three different ways as we close. Apply this in personal ways. Three thoughts. One, include God. Do you include God in your plans? You need to. Have you already decided what you're going to do tomorrow? What you're going to do this week? Yet you haven't even talked to God about it? I'm going to do this. I'm going to close this sale. I'm going to make this call. I'm going to fix this dinner. Planning without prayer is presumption. Some of you may be thinking, "I've been thinking about becoming a Christian, or one of these days I'm going to get baptized. I'm going to get serious about my spiritual life one of these days." Listen to me. Presumption is foolish. The Bible says you're not even guaranteed tomorrow. Follow Jesus now. Don't croak without Jesus. And it's not because you may die tomorrow. It's because you could truly live tomorrow if you committed your life to Christ today. Second thing is, look for God's purpose in your problems. Instead of asking, "Why me?" say, "What do You want to teach me? What do I need to be learning? How might I be Joseph and trust You for 40 years in order to see the fulfillment in the next 40? You praise the planner and the plan, and you follow his plan. The last thing is you take advantage of the privilege of prayer. Confidence is calling upon God who is in control. Whatever relationship that there's a struggle, whatever financial difficulty, health issue, whatever you don't even know what you're going to encounter this week, God is in control, and we can have confidence in God who is already there and bringing it to your life so that you will shine through His glory.